Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
I always seem to catch you stink right before or right after Vandals weekend.
Yes.
So before we jump into everything that we got to get to with training camp starting this week, I got to know, brother, how was your yearly reunion with your college teammates?
It was great. It's always funny because you're completely off the grid. You know, you're out in the middle of just outside Eastern Washington, but like you're completely off the grid. Cell phones don't work. Nothing, you know. So it was great. It was great to be together with those guys. 19 straight years that we've gotten together. Had a bunch of guys out there. I told you my buddy Booner. We do it at his cabin. He has a ranch down the stretch ranch where they bring retired horses and pair them with military guys who've served this country. That, you know, most of these guys are suffering from, you know, issues about, you know, kind of reentry to society and things of that nature. So we had a couple of the military guys with us this weekend as well. That was really cool.
Nice.
And then you sit down, you know, and you hear the stories, and it is like, man, the sacrifices that these guys make for us at 19 years old, at 20 years old, it just is mind-boggling. Like, I hear the stories, and I'm like, you know, I can't even imagine going through what you guys did in four tours at Iraq, you know. And just, it was amazing. It was an amazing weekend. It's always fun to get together. Tons of laughs. Just a lot of meat, beer. You know, that's how Vandal Weekend goes. But we had a blast. We had a blast. It was fun.
Okay. Well, we've had fun here talking about the Denver Broncos. Now it's here. Can you believe it? You asked me how my weekend was. I was like, this is the last weekend I did nothing, basically, because
right
now football season's here, and we're going to have a swarm of information for, like, the next 9 months. I love it.
Right. Yeah, it is. It is. It's great. And it's fun. You know, for us as Bronco guys and Bronco, you know, just Bronco country and fans, you know, to start it up, new regime, a lot of expectations, you know, a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot that that we're going to get into over the course of the next, you know, several months. But it's going to be fun to see it all unfold. It'll be fun. And you know, a lot of the questions we've had over the last couple of years are going to get answered. You know, is it the talent? Is it the coaching? You know, was it Vance Joseph in over his head? Can Vic Fangio, a guy who's been a coordinator forever, actually make the transition? Because we've seen great coordinators. I played for Norv Turner. Norv has been a great coordinator in this league as a head coach.
Right.
He hasn't been very good. You know, so we've seen these things happen before. There's just a ton of question marks.
Dom Capers, Dick LeBeau. Greg Williams.
Right. Roll through them.
Jimmy Haslett. Haslett, right?
Hell, our own Wade Phillips.
Exactly.
Right? You know, that haven't found that same success threshold or ratio as head coaches as they have as coordinators. And I think part of it, Cecil, is, you know, you become less hands-on. And this is a really hard thing for coaches. You become less hands-on with the players, and you have to get more hands-on with the coaches. So I was over at Shanahan's watching some tape and going over some of, you know, the kind of implementation of OTAs and offense and defense and all this stuff. And as the head coach, we're just watching some tape of the 49ers kind of putting stuff in. And Mike was talking about, and it's so funny because you sit there and you think back to your own career and having Mike address the players. And he's like, well, I'm addressing the players, but what I'm really doing is talking to the coaches. Now I'm coaching the coaches because yeah, we're competitive and we want to compete, but we have to understand that we're in this thing together and we have got to, you know, kind of the old adage where iron sharpens iron. We've got to be sharpening each other, but it's not about your group winning every drill. You know what I mean? So, I never really thought about it that way where, hey, the linebacker coach wants the linebackers to win every drill, right? The D-line coach wants right. The D-line. The O-line coach wants the O-line to win every drill, finish every drill on our terms. You know, we used to talk about it all the time, but there is this connectivity that has to go on and we have to be able, you know, to service each other in the form of getting each other better as football players. And, you know, that takes competition, but there's a time when you have to lay off too, you know, and make sure we can get plays off. And so it just is an interesting dynamic. And, you know, I think a lot of coaches really struggle when they're great coordinators and you have that connectivity and you're always in there with the players. And all of a sudden you have to take a step back and you've got to view it from 30,000 feet, you know, as opposed to being right in it.
Right. And then he's got to coach up the coaches instead of coaching up the players. Like, this has to be Vic Fangio's greatest challenge. Because here's a guy that during minicamp and OTAs admitted to us in the media, which, by the way, he probably doesn't like dealing with us because you have to do that more as a coach. But he admitted to us this offseason, like, yeah, I kind of, you know, ran some more plays, ran some more drills so the defense could win.
Mm-hmm.
So already Fangio, you know, has had to look differently at this transition.
Yeah, it was funny when I was doing a 49er game and I was asking Kyle Shanahan, his first year being a head coach. And he goes, you know, when things didn't go well for you as a group, as an offense, when I was a coordinator, he goes, I just locked myself in my room, you know, locked myself, breaking down tape, wouldn't shower, you know, just in sweats and greasy hair and a hat for sequester myself for 2 days, you know. I'm just going to go to work. I'm going to work harder. You know, I'm going to burn the midnight oil. We're going to figure this thing out, right? Because as head coach, you got to shower, you got to shave, you got to present yourself to the media, you got to present yourself to your team, you got to present yourself to your coaches. Like, there's a lot more kind of juggling of the organization that goes into being a head coach. You can't just sequester yourself in a room, even though the majority of the guys, that's what they do. That's what they like. That's what they've known.
Right.
And, you know, Vic Fangio is probably no different. Like, he didn't have to meet with the media every week, you know. It wasn't his thing. And now he's after every practice and, you know, before. And you know, this it's just part of the gig. So it's going to be interesting to see how his transition, you know, and what's been different for him and how he kind of deals with that.
How will we know that he's not Wade Phillips as a head coach or Dom Capers as a head coach or Dick LeBeau as a head coach? Right. And all due respect to those three men, especially – because, like, Dick LeBeau's Hall of Famer and a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator, he was a lousy head coach.
Right.
So what clues should we be even looking for?
Yeah.
Vic Fangio.
You know, I think it's a good question. I think obviously when you see the coaches really coaching and him just, like, a lot of times it's less hands on, I think. Like, where he's
just
back there.
Got to bother a guy like that.
Oh, I think it's incredibly tough. But basically, you know, giving the marching orders like a good general and then to being able to sit back and see how his coaches execute those marching orders, you know, and then like a lot of the stuff you won't see. I think a lot of stuff is a lot of the work is done behind closed doors, you know, where he's getting those guys right. But I think a lot of times, like when we were really rolling, during practice, you never heard Mike Shanahan. Didn't say anything. Just stood back and watched. You know, occasionally he would say, hey, I want that, you know, want that run again. I want this or whatever. Defense gave us a bad look or, hey, man, you know, you got to on that Dover route, you got to really be tight on, you know, whatever it is. Right. But very rarely when we were rolling, you didn't ever hear Mike's voice. He just stood back there 40 yards behind and watched and made sure everybody was doing their job.
How could you tell when he was mad?
Well, you knew when he was mad. Like Fire Marshal Bill. The dude would be, I don't know, blood red. Oh. Yeah, he would be angry.
Okay, Vic Fangio, It's on you now. And it's on you with a defense that should be elite in 2019. But will there be a passing of the torch? We'll discuss next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Broncos defense set to be elite in 2019, but how does it look with a 30-year-old Von Miller? And how does it look with a surging and up-and-coming Bradley Chubb? Now, we'll get into the Noah Fant conversation a little bit later, Stink. But is this the year, year two, where Bradley Chubb leaps Von Miller as the most dangerous threat for this defense?
And absolutely not. I mean, I think Bradley Chubb is a extremely good player. Von Miller is a freak athlete. So, now, Bradley Chubb is a great player. Don't get me wrong. But I just know if I'm game planning against the Denver Broncos, when we break the huddle and said, ready, break, and everybody claps, you spin your head around, you look for 458 is 100% of the time. I mean, I've had the good fortune of calling games for Fox and calling a couple of Denver Bronco games. And let me just tell you what defensive coordinators or what offensive coordinators talk about, is where's 58 and how are we going to block that son of a gun, right? And it's not that Chubb isn't special. He's relentless in his effort. He's got strength and he's got speed, but there is not one player, Khalil Mack included, that can turn a corner like Von Miller can turn a corner. What he does, the angles that he generates are not human.
It's Barry Sanders-like.
Right. They're just not human. So it's interesting when you kind of start looking at film, whatever the numbers might be. And hey, man, Bradley Chubb may usurp him in total sacks at some point. Doesn't mean, I don't look at like total sacks and say, oh, okay, instantly.
He's
a better player. Like, no, I don't function that way. I don't have the, hey, it's all about fantasy numbers kind of philosophical approach. Vaughn does things athletically that he's probably the only player in the league that can do the things he does athletically. He's once in a generation type player. And, we said that Bradley Chubb's a generational player. There are multiple generational players. But there's very few once in a generational type player like Barry Sanders, as you mentioned. He was one of two or three guys that I ever got off the bench to watch play. Like there's only certain guys that you know it when you see it type of thing.
Right.
There's only certain guys that you will go out of your way, during a week of preparation to go, hey, let me just flip over to the other side of the ball and watch this guy play a little bit because they're just that remarkable. Like they do things that defy gravity, defy logic as a player. And Vaughn has that ability. Like Vaughn, if you want to like break down the difference between Vaughn and Khalil Mack, Khalil Mack's a great player. Khalil Mack from a strength standpoint, point of attack, set an edge, do some of those things. He's a superior player that way. From a fluidity of movement and just an ability to feel you, your presence, and to counter those things, I don't think Von Miller has an equal on the outside. Now, I still think that Aaron Donald is the best player in football, bar none. I think he is the best player. Like, I watch enough film to watch that guy, and I'm like, Lord have mercy, I'm glad I don't play. Because he's a different, I'm just telling you, he's a different cat. But on the edge, there's nobody with the fluidity of movement skills that Vaughn possesses. It's just not natural. It's like, there's certain things that are hand of God. Like people always ask me when my son was young, like the other fathers, how do you get him to throw so hard? And, I would mess with them. Like I'd say, oh, well, every night I rub buttermilk on his arm, and they're like taking notes, right?
Right.
And then I'm like, man, I'm just yanking your chain, dude. I'm like, hand of God.
Do you churn your own buttermilk?
Right. Yeah. I'm just like, hand of God. Like hand of God touches you and says, you're going to throw that hard or you're not. And all the work in the world, I mean, you're always going to get better if you put the work in and you may gain some, but when you just have this natural ability and talent, that's just a hand of God thing. Like Von Miller, hand of God. Like he touched Vaughn and Vaughn's a different cat that way.
You said without question, Von Miller would be more dangerous than Bradley Chubb.
Sure.
Is it going to be closer? Is it going to be tight? And when will we see? Because eventually it'll happen where your opposing offensive coordinators that you talk to on a weekly basis are going to go, okay, now we're worried about 55.
Mm.
Because you're going to double team Vaughn.
Right.
Maybe not triple team him as much as he used to be.
Right.
Chubb's going to take advantage of that. Maybe he has more sacks.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Chubb has 15 sacks. Vaughn has 14. Whatever
right.
the number is.
Yeah.
Is it going to be closer, though? Because you answered like, no, it's Vaughn, no question. But is it going to be closer this year?
Let me tell you where, when it will get closer. And it certainly could be. But you tell me when Vaughn loses some of that bend, some of that, like some of the flexibility and some of the things that, like I said, he's like Gumby.
He goes I'm speed Gumby, to power though too. Like oh, he's flexible, but he also has a little power to his
There's
game.
No question he's got great power. Like I said, hey, Khalil Mack's a more powerful man. Like,
Edge-setting.
Right. He is. I'm not saying Vaughn isn't powerful. Like, Vaughn has got unbelievable body strength. I've seen Vaughn do things to tackles that it's just like you owe them an apology. Like, it's what you did. But, you know, you talk to players in the league that have played against both of them, and they will tell you that, like Khalil Mack has the kind of strength your dad had when you were 9 and he grabbed your arm because you were doing something you knew you weren't supposed to be doing. Like, that dad strength. On the football field, like it is shocking. You hit him and he shocks you, right? Like, and I've played against those guys where you're like, man, I am going to clean this dude's clock. Like, I am going to light this, and you hit him and it like it basically sends a shiver through your whole body. And you're like, ooh, that dude is made of something different. What that is, I'm not sure. Like Lawrence Taylor was that way. I'd say Charles Haley was that way. Even as string beanie as Charles Haley was, and you hit Charles Haley and you knew that dude was, he was connected to the ground. Like that was like, wow. And he felt no pain either. So, you know, until Vaughn loses, and we'll all lose it over time just because of, you know, injuries and everything else. I mean, he loses that ability to dip and to bend and to do all those things. And some of that is taken away from him. That's when Bradley Chubb is ready to usurp him, but that I don't see that happening anytime soon, not in the next couple of years.
Well, Chargers running back Melvin Gordon is backpedaling so fast, it's going to be like Eric Decker tripping over lines. We'll get over that next in the Morning Brew.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning!
Morning!
It's time for your Morning Brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to eat lightning, and you're going to crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stat!
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on!
Tonight, low score. High fly ball, deep right field. We got Tiger David Dahl to the second deck. 13th home run of the year for All-Star David Dahl. What a top four.
There you go, AT&T Sports Network on the call. And, well, Ryan McMahon's three hits helped the Rockies top the Reds, and they notched the first home series win in a month. They're back after the break, stink, in a big way.
Well, I mean, I don't know about back. I mean, they gave up. Gray looked great. John looked great. Freeland was unfortunate in his return to the big leagues, not very good. Just by the numbers, I didn't get to see the game. I was out of Vandal weekend, so I didn't get to watch him. Sometimes the numbers aren't necessarily indicative of the performance, but I'm assuming they kind of are in that case. And then Sensatella wasn't great yesterday. So, you know, starting pitching still an issue for the Rockies, and obviously they thought Freeland was going to come back and help solidify that after a stint down in the minors, and that didn't look like it happened in the first outing. But, you know, we'll see the progression and how he does the next time he gets an opportunity.
Got to help him a little bit after the break, though, to get that series win.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. To get the series win is big. And, you know, Cincinnati, you look at the division they're playing right now, everybody's within a couple games of each other, I think, in the Central. So, yeah, it was a big they've actually played pretty well.
How big is that mentally not to just check out? Because there's a lot of Rockies fans who are already like, here we go again. We're right. Out of it. It's after the All-Star break. We got no chance.
Yeah, no, I think it's huge. I think the thing about this organization, you don't feel like they're going to actually make a move. You know, and if they do, it's going to be something that you, like, it was going to be a piece, maybe a piece in the bullpen that you're not really familiar with. It's a guy, you know, a guy that maybe has had really good success at the major league level, but you just don't know his name. He's not a star. If they go some in a direction, I think that's the way they'll go with this bullpen. I think they need to go that direction with this bullpen. They need to find some help in the back end of that bullpen, but we'll see exactly what happens. But at least winning a home series, you've got to win all the home series. And they got that done, even though, you know, last night was 10-9.
Next in the morning brew.
Like I said, I'm not going to sit here and be like, man, I don't want to go back to the Chargers. Like, that's the team who blessed me with an opportunity. And, you know, they started my life. They changed my life. You know, that out of all 32 teams, that was the team that called. And I can't forget them for that. But, you know, I want to get paid. And that's just kind of what it is, you know.
There's Melvin Gordon, Chargers running back, saying, also, you can't just replace a great back. Close quote. Great? Melvin Gordon's pretty good. I don't know if I'd call him a great back, Stink.
Yeah, he was good last year. He's been inconsistent. He's not been healthy. He's had some, and he's got a knee that is a knee that has to be managed. You know, they were all concerned about Todd Gurley's knee right now and the arthritic changes in Todd Gurley's knee. And don't think that Melvin Gordon doesn't have the same knee that Todd Gurley does, because he does.
Microfracture.
He's had, I think, multiple microfractures, at least one that I know of. And, you know, I called a game of theirs a couple of years ago where he just didn't look very good. And, you know, Anthony Lynn said he just does not have his power. You know, he just doesn't have confidence. And obviously last year he did, but he still didn't play 16 games last year. What did he play last year? 14 maybe?
Yeah, and he's the guy that's only played 16 once in his career.
And it's his first year that he ever had 1,000 yards. Great back is a bit of a stretch. In a league where you play 16 games, you need like 67 yards a game to get over 1,000. Let's not overhype this thing.
Next in the morning brew.
I mean, I want to be a Cowboy forever. I think the people that are doing the deal feel the same way. So to me, it's no rush. I know it'll get done. But as far as the numbers concerned, my focus is to win the locker room. I know I'll get taken care of, so it is what it is.
Dak Prescott there for the Dallas Cowboys, not looking for a team-friendly deal. And why should he be? It's a quarterback-desperate league, and he's probably going to get around $30 million a year.
Yeah, no, he should, you know, maximize. And you know, I always like it when guys gamble on themselves, you know, when guys go out and say, hey, man, I'll play. You go out there and prove that that I'm good to go, you know. I like that aspect of it. Dak is going to get paid. I think Dak is only going to get better and better and better. And I think I've told you before, man, he's got a calm, like he's got a, as Scott Linehan, his former offensive coordinator, told me, man, he's got an old soul about him. He just doesn't get rattled. And he plays that way. He's a calming influence in the huddle. I think as they continue to transition to more of a pocket game, which they did last year, there's always going to be some growing pains when you say, hey, man, you can't rely on, you know, the neck down aspect of your game. You gotta mature to the neck up and make the decisions from the pocket. You just, when harm comes your way, you just can't scramble around and start trying to make a play every time. Like, you gotta manage that. And that's part of the growth process that we saw last year. I think you'll continue to grow that way.
Just look how traffic in Orlando changed the Broncos' fate. Because Dak Prescott missed his flight to Denver pre-draft process. I remember watching him at the Senior Bowl. He looked like a perfect Gary Kubiak quarterback. And because he missed his flight, missed his visit with the Broncos, they drafted Paxton Lynch.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
Not good.
Not good. All right, Dak, go get your money. Next to the morning brew.
Here's a pass to the right tip.
There you go. Taking pumpkin pie, there's DeMarcus Lawrence, Cowboys defensive end, who wants to be the best to ever play, Stink. Also, he kind of threw down the gauntlet with Von Miller this weekend, too, because Von had said earlier this year to USA Today he wants 20 sacks. He wants the most sacks of all time.
Mm-hmm.
DeMarcus Lawrence said, I want more sacks. I want to get to 20 before Von does this year.
Right.
And I want him to be chasing me.
DeMarcus Lawrence is a really good football player. Really good. So it'll be interesting. The other thing is, you know, he's a defensive end, so he's got the benefit of essentially always having his hand in the dirt. He's always rushing the passer, where Vaughn's going to drop back in coverage some. Vaughn's going to be on in Vic Fangio's scheme. I think Vaughn's going to be a little bit more. They'll use him as a decoy in blitz schemes occasionally. You know, because if you're always double teaming and you're always aware of where 58 is, and all of a sudden you have 58 kind of fake a rush and then drop into the flat or whatever, and now safety comes blowing through the C gap, like those things are beneficial. Like that's a game plan situation, but that's one less pass rush opportunity that you get. Like DeMarcus Lawrence is going to get, he'll get more opportunities to rush the passer. So theoretically, he should have, just based on that alone, he should have more sacks than Vaughn. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just natural. I mean, if you get, you know, if you're getting, let's call it 45 opportunity or 40 opportunities to rush the passer every game in a 40, you know, in a 40 drop back game, you're getting 40 opportunities, and Von Miller's getting 32 opportunities in a 40 pass in a 40 game like that, a 40 drop back game. Like theoretically, who should have more? The guy who has more opportunities should get more sacks.
Right.
Right. So
the guy's banged up with a shoulder injury. I wrote about it today in the Mile High Monday at 1043thefan.com. Like, he had 10.5 sacks last year. Mm-hmm. Now 15 the year before that. Very good player, but he's also recovering from shoulder surgery.
Right.
And he's talking smack to Vaughn. It's like, get healthy first, bro.
Because mm-hmm.
his week one status is even kind of a little bit up in the air right now.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. But I like the bravado. And one thing that Vaughn has done, I think, that he's done for this league, he's created with his, you know, his pass rush summit and all that stuff. I think he's created this friendly rivalry between all these guys that are all chasing each other, all these great pass rushers. So I think that part is a fun part of it.
And that's a wrap for the Morning Brew. You hear it each and every morning here on Schlereth and Evans at 6:30 a.m. I'm Cecil Lammy sitting in for Mike Evans today. And, well, we've got to check in with our guy, James Merrillat from 1043thefan.com. See if things have calmed down a little bit for him after he rated Peyton Manning number one Bronco of all time over John Elway. We'll check in with James next. Well, this is James Merrillat from 1043thefan.com. He joins us now on Schlereth and Evans. And, James, first things first, I got to know, how has it been and the reaction that Peyton Manning was number one on your 60 since 60 and not John Elway? How's it been kind of dealing with that?
I have learned a lot of new words that are synonyms for idiot. That's a lot of what I've gotten on Twitter, Facebook, you name it. It didn't go over particularly well with a lot of Broncos country. But, you know, there were some people who could understand the argument and were willing to take off the orange-colored glasses for a little while and look at it, objectively, and could see my rationale. But I would say it was universally panned. We'll put it that way.
James, like, one, I thought you'd have a different name right now and be in witness relocation. So what was, for you, I mean, because I want to hear it, because when I saw it, I was like, oh, gosh, James is an idiot. So that's what I thought. But, I mean, I don't want to call you an idiot, so I won't do that. But what was the rationale behind it?
Yeah, and there were a lot of different things that went into it. But really, the kind of tiebreakers for me, Mark, were, you know, when Manning was here for those four seasons, you know, they were favored in the vast majority of the games, which, you know, put whatever stock you want to with Vegas. But just looking at it from a fan's perspective, you know, I watched every game John Elway played for 16 years. Obviously, watched every game Manning played for the 4 years he was here. I never went into a game when Manning was the quarterback thinking they could lose the game. I expected them to win. I was shocked if they lost. That wasn't the case with John Elway. Now, everybody looks back and they're, you know, through their nostalgia glasses and remembers the last couple of years and the Super Bowl teams and the team that almost went undefeated and all that kind of stuff. There were some rough games in the late 80s, early 90s where John just wasn't very good. So, you know, it's easy to remember all the positives and forget the negatives. I don't recall a time thinking, boy, they got no shot in this one with Peyton. It was always the opposite. And quite frankly, for, you know, three seasons, in the fourth season, you know, that's a whole nother discussion for a whole nother day. The square peg round hole of the Gary Kubiak offense. But for three seasons, he was the best player in the league. John had one MVP season in 16 years, and that was a quirky strike season, and there was some other things to it. So Manning is, I've never seen anybody play quarterback better than I saw Peyton Manning play it while he was with the Broncos, and that includes John Elway. And then the final piece was, if I was putting together a team and I could only draft players who played for the Broncos and I could only take them as they were when they wore the orange and blue, my number one overall pick would have been Peyton Manning from 2012 to 2015. So I felt like, well, then I got to put him number one.
He's James Merrillat, 1043thefan.com. Did the 60 since 60 countdown? Manning 1, Elway 2, controversy abounds. And I do want to ask you, James, how much did the team around these guys kind of impact your grading? Because when I think back to John Elway going to the Super Bowls when they lost them, like, Broncos had a strong defense, but offensively, no offense to the Sammy Winders, you know, Mississippi Mudwalk wasn't just his touchdown dance, it was the way he ran the ball. Like, Elway didn't have a whole lot around him. And sure, Manning seemed to have a better team around him. How did you weigh that in your rankings?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a factor. And look, those three teams Elway took to the Super Bowl in the 80s, you know, everybody likes to say, oh, he just carried those teams. And you're right, offensively, they weren't loaded with talent. I mean, I think until Gary Zimmerman got here, he didn't play behind a Pro Bowl offensive lineman during his career. The Three Amigos were, you know, a cool story and a neat marketing gimmick, but none of those guys were Pro Bowl wide receivers. So I get what you're saying. By the same token, though, you know, we've talked about it when I've been on with Mark before. You know, the Julius Thomases of the world, the Eric Deckers, the Demaryius Thomas, the people who say, wow, look at all the talent those around Manning. When I'm putting those guys on the list, everybody's saying, well, they're just a product of Peyton Manning. So it's like, well, we gotta pick a lane here. We can't have it both ways. So, I guess, you know, it's a little bit, tough to gauge, because were those guys, just not putting up big numbers in the 80s with Elway because of John, because of the offense, because they weren't great players? You know, I like to think John had more talent around him than people think. I don't want to disparage the Keith Bishops and Billy Bryans and, you know, those kind of players. Steve Watson made our list. There were a lot of guys that made the list that John played with. So, look, Peyton probably had better teams, I would agree, but I don't think it's this vast chasm that everybody likes to make it out to be.
All right, James. Well, listen, man, we appreciate you, brother. Have a great one. And good work on the 60, the whole 60 list. It was a interesting read throughout the whole entire process. So we appreciate that, buddy.
You bet. Thanks, fellas. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. There we have him. James Merrillat, 1043thefan.com's James Merrillat on our Jägermeister hotline. And that, you talk about an unenviable job to write 60, to pick your 60 mm-hmm. top Broncos of all time, put them on order like that. Like, that's, pretty tall task.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of research. And I talked to James about that. And he said, you know, the kind of the fun thing to do is go back through the history and to read all the things, especially, you know, the players that you didn't necessarily grow up with and get to watch, and to kind of, you know, quantify their careers and put a list together like that. Tons of work you put into that. So, I mean, one thing I can't argue, you can argue the positioning of players, and you can argue Elway versus Peyton. You can do all those things. But everything that he did was pretty well thought out, and he can validate, you know, every pick with an opinion and kind of the factual process to back it up, you know, the numbers to back it up. So, pretty cool. Pretty good job by, or really good job by James Merrillat.
You had one game to win, and you had to pick a Bronco, because I know you'd pick Tom Brady. Like,
right.
I immediately already mm-hmm. know that. By the way, I found this last night on the interwebs, and because it was on the internet, it has to be true.
Right.
I have to read you this stat, because it's about your guy, Tom Brady.
Mm.
And the fact that Tom Brady is more likely to go to a Super Bowl percentage-wise
uh-huh.
than Steph Curry is to hit a three. That was on,
wow.
I saw on Facebook. Tom Brady has made it to the Super Bowl 52% of the seasons he's been a starting quarterback. Steph Curry's three-point average is 43%. Tom Brady is more likely to make it to a Super Bowl than Steph Curry is to make a three.
9%. That's 9% more
likely. Don't make me do math. Right.
Tom Brady go to the Super Bowl. I'm telling you what. It's an amazing. I always say the thing that amazes me most about that is that human nature says when you've had a bunch of success, you know, you become a little bit sated with that success, right?
It's complacent.
Like, yeah, you kind of coast a little bit. The fact that whether it's Brady, whether it's Belichick, the fact that those guys just throw it away. Okay, that was a fun season. Trash can it. Let's go to work. Let's figure out how to do it again. I find that fascinating because it totally goes against human nature.
Let's flip it back to Elway then. Elway wins a couple of those three Super Bowls they lost.
Mm-hmm.
How does his career play out differently? If they actually win against the Giants.
Right.
If they win the Redskins.
Right. Like, does he hang around for the 97-98 season?
Right.
You know, is he gone? Is he retired by then? Yeah, he was still chasing. You know, you can sit there and say, hey, if I retire, I'll be fine with, you know, not winning a world championship. Everybody says it, but nobody believes it.
You know it eats Dan Marino a lot.
Yeah.
You know it does.
Absolutely it does. Absolutely. There's no question about it. So, yeah, that's part of the deal.
Okay. All right. Well, we have to get into Ed Donatell and this Broncos defense because the Broncos defense has high standards. And how will Donatell help Vic Fangio in his transition to being a head coach for the first time? That's next.